It's January 1st, 2024, and you are listening to Reality Daily, your daily source of reality TV schedule, news, and commentary. My name is Wyatt, and along with a plethora of other contributors, we have been doing reality television podcasts since 2020. We recently brought back in a multi-episode a week format in May of 2023, and at the beginning of this year, we have decided to do a daily show because there's so much reality TV going on in the world, there's no way that you keep up with it all, and that's where our job comes in. We're going to tell you exactly what shows are premiering on the day of the podcast, as well as news that you might have missed from the last 24 hours, and give some of our commentary on some of the shows that we are watching. Now, in this episode, you're going to hear me break down what I believe are the top 10 reality shows coming out in January of 2024. You're also going to hear me break down the reality TV news that you might have missed, the shows that are coming out today on January the 1st. You're going to get into a couple commentaries. I'm talking about the Challenge 39, then I'm joined by Chris to recap the House of Villains finale here a couple weeks ago, and then lastly, I'm going to recap the second and third episode of 1,000 Pound Sisters. When we were doing the weekly episodes, that was something that really popped off, got a lot of great feedback on that. So I'm interested to talk about that. And then lastly, I'll end it with an outro and give you a little preview of what's coming up tomorrow. Now, without any further ado, let me get you into my top 10 shows. All right, at number 10 is going to be the third season of Next Level Chef. The Gordon Ramsay cooking competition sees multiple different types of chefs. We're going to have home cooks, professional chefs, and social media chefs. They're going to have the three-tier structure. So if you've never seen it, the people that are at the top, they're going to have the best equipment and the first choice of the produce. Then the second level is a standard kitchen, and they'll have whatever the top level doesn't get. And then the bottom level, they'll have the scraps. They'll barely have anything to cook with. So it's really interesting. It's a very haves or have not approach. And it's going to be interesting to see how the third season works out. Number 9 is going to be Love is Blind Sweden. Now, we've seen Love is Blind in the U.S. Of course, Brazil has had a few seasons. Japan even had a one-off season. Sweden, I don't think I can name a reality TV show from Sweden, and I've seen over 1,000. So it's going to be very interesting to see how the Swedish community reacts to reality television. Really should be fun. And like Love is Blind in the U.S., it's not going to drop all the episodes at one time. You're going to have 4 episodes that will drop, then 4 episodes, and you'll have 2, which will be the marriages, and then you'll have the reunion after that. Coming in at number 8 is the 16th season of the iconic franchise. It's RuPaul's Drag Race. Now, number 7 is going to be Traitors UK. A lot of people would say the Traitors UK was the best Traitor season that we've seen. It's better than the US, better than both of the Australian seasons, New Zealand and Canada. One thing that's kind of bothering me is we don't know anything about this season. We don't know the cast. We haven't been told if there's any twists from last season. So for me, it's harder to get as invested as some of these other shows. Although I'm sure by the time that we're done with the first week, which is the 3rd, the 4th, and the 5th, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday will be the first 3 episodes of the Traitors UK. I'm sure I'll be so happy to see that. Now stick around. We're going to be doing not only daily recaps myself, but you know, me and Jeremy are going to be talking about the first 3 episodes during the weekend. Coming in at number 6 is going to be The Bachelor. Joey is The Bachelor, and I'm not too happy about it. Here's the thing, he's a good guy. I just don't know if he's going to be interesting. That's my editorial process on it, but it'll be very interesting. The Bachelor's always fun. So that has to be number 6. Coming in at number 5 is Love and Hip Hop Atlanta. Saul Santana has been added to the cast, which if you know anything about him, whether his song Booty or you know his fight with DJ Academics recently online, you know he's going to be a great character for the show. So if you're into that type of drama, I think he's going to be just an absolute treat to see. Coming in at number 4 is Vanderpump Rules. It's the fallout of Scandoval. I'm just curious to see how they are going to approach that, how much of the season will be tied up in just him and his drama and his bullshit. He's been on a little bit of a tour trying to regain some image. You know, he's kind of taken advantage of this infamy, I guess, by he was on Special Forces, he was on The Masked Singer. So we're interested to see how this season pans out. Number 3 is Love Island UK. It's the All-Stars format. Now, typically, I'm not a big fan of like returning members for these love shows because I think that they're probably there for the wrong reasons. But you know what? I don't really care as long as you're giving us great content. No word on the cast. There's obviously been some speculation online, but we're not sure yet. And that's going to, I believe, premiere on the 15th. Coming in at number 2 is The Trust. It's a new Netflix competition show where it's going to have, I believe, a handful of people are going to be playing for $250,000. Now, all of that money can be divided equally at the end if they all make it, but the catch is here is that you can be voted out. And if you're voted out, then that means everybody else is going to get a bigger chunk of the money. So it's a game of greed. That's the subtitle of the show. And it only takes one vote for you to be eliminated. So it's going to be very interesting. I wouldn't like just hear the format and say, oh, this is a great show. I watched the trailer. Trailer was great. Then I saw Suri and Johnny Bananas from The Challenge. They were promoting the show, like paid promotion. So if their Netflix is getting in their pocketbook to like get people like Bananas and Suri invested, they must know that this is going to be a great show. So I'm very interested for that. That's why it's my number two. But number one has to be The Traitors US. It's so hard for me not to get overly excited for this to the point where it's almost has to be a letdown because I'm thinking about it in so high. But listen to the people that are on this show, right? We have people from Survivor, Big Brother, The Challenge, Love Island, The Real Housewives, RuPaul's Drag Race, The Bachelor, Dancing with the Stars, Bling Empire. Plus, we got Michael Jordan's son, a member of UK Parliament, and then a former heavyweight boxing champion, Deontay Wilder. I just don't understand how this cast got together. This is the Avengers. Like, I mentioned this later with Chris talking about House of Villains, but this is the Avengers of a cast, and I'm so interested to see how this is going to turn out. It's going to be three episodes when they initially drop, but then after that, it's going to be weekly, and I think that is what you want, especially for an American TV style. I know the UK, they like to air a bunch of episodes a week, Australia as well, but I think one episode a week is really where the Traitors can thrive, and I think with this cast, you want to make sure it thrives, right? Because I know during the first season, people are already spoiling the end because they dropped all the episodes at one time. So I know Naveed, one of our reality TV correspondents, he didn't even watch the season because he got spoiled on who the winner is like immediately after the episodes dropped. So it'll be very interesting to see. So that is our top 10. Now stay tuned for what's coming up. All right, let's talk about the premieres that are coming out tonight. So we have multiple shows that are coming out. The first one's going to be 90 Day Fiance, The Single Life. It's going to be, we're going to see the return of Natalie and Veronica. We're going to see New Edition's Tim. He was Veronica's ex, so it's going to be interesting when we have Veronica and her ex, Tim, both here. Tyrae, if you watch 90 Day Fiance, he was the guy that got catfished. Like, we didn't even see who that other person was that he was talking to. And we have John. He's actually not from 90 Day Fiance. He's the brother of Patrick, but people loved him, so it's going to be interesting to see how he goes. Then we're going to have Debbie, 68-year-old Debbie, and we're going to see Chantel from The Family. Chantel is going to be back on our screens in the Single Life format. Then we have America's Got Talent, The Fantasy League. We're going to have four judges. Mel B is coming back. It's going to be Mel B, Heidi Klum, Howie Mandel, and Simon Cowell. They're going to be drafting a team of 10 from a group of 40 acts that they apparently done before the quote-unquote auditions. And then the people will audition in groups of 10, and then five people will advance to the semifinals. Now, what is going to be probably the more interesting part of this is that there's going to be the golden buzzer. If a coach hits the golden buzzer, they steal the golden buzzer from, they steal the person on their team. So you can hit the golden buzzer for your own team member if you want to, but you only get one for the entire season. But if you hit for somebody that isn't on your team, you steal them from your team. So I don't think that this is needed, personally. The America's Got Talent, it's fine. They've done the very early in the year seasons. They've done All-Stars. They did like one that was like the Worlds, and they did one that was for extreme sports. I just think this is a little bit kind of like silly. Like, it's basically All-Stars again, but we'll see how it goes. Remember, the Kid Baking Championship is going to premiere over on the Food Network. They're going to be baking treats about the best parts of school, which is probably going to have some really fun confessionals about how much they don't really like school. Then we're going to see Celebrity IOU. This is where a celebrity gets to do a home renovation for somebody over on HGTV. It's going to be Ray Romano doing a home renovation for his assistants. Over in the UK, Jeopardy is premiering. It's not technically a reality show, but it is a game show, and it's going to be very interesting because they're going to do triple Jeopardy, unlike in America. But very similar to what the celebrities are doing, though, now, where they'll have their single round, double round, triple round, and then that. So it'll be in a one-hour format. Interested to see how that does. Also, the Great British Bake Off is doing their New Year's Eve special. We're going to have Maxie from season 13 back in 2022. We're going to have Maggie and Jurgen from season 12, and then we're going to have Mark, and that's Mark with a K, from series 11. Here's an honorable mention. This doesn't premiere today, but it did premiere a few days ago, and if you have Netflix in Asia, I certainly would recommend it. Apprentice One Championship Edition Season 2. I watched Season 1. It was very good. Season 2 I have not been able to see yet, but I'm very excited for it as well. Now, if you don't know The Apprentice, you know, that was a show that Donald Trump got famous on, where you would have all these people, 16 people, trying to compete for a job. This is a little bit different because this is not geo-focused. It's not going to be just people from one country. You got people from the United States, Canada, Asia, Europe. But what's interesting here is the company they're working for is One Championship. It is the leading provider of mixed martial arts in Asia. So it'll be very interesting to see how people react to that. So it's a little bit of combination of like physical challenges, because it's an MMA company along with business challenges. From what I've heard, the business acumen of the contestants are probably a little bit lower, but their drama is higher. So if you like reality television, that might be something to check out. Here's some documentaries that are coming out today. BitConned It's about three crypto brothers that scam the market. That will be available on Netflix. The Twin Experiments, You Are What You Eat. I believe this is actually a docu-series. It's going to be on Netflix as well. Twins are going to change their diet for 8 weeks to measure the effects of each of them. That's very interesting. Over on Fox, you're going to have a MASH documentary. If you have a grandparent, they probably watch MASH. So it'll be interesting to see how that documentary goes. And then over on the ID Network, you'll have the first episode of The Curious Case of Natalie Grace. This was like an orphan that the family thought was similar to the movie Orphan. They thought they was going to like burn down their house or anything. So they left them and like went to Canada. And this person was like 9 years old and was not able to live by themselves and got brought in by somebody else. It's going to be interesting. They're going to go through the entire story. And then I believe they're actually going to be able to confront some of these ugly accusations by the original family. And another honorable mention, this came out Saturday. It is The Captains over on Netflix. It is a docuseries of the World Cup. Even if you're not a soccer fan, I definitely would recommend these. The Quarterback, Full Swing, Breaking Point, like all of these sports docuseries are really strong because it really gives you the backbone of who these athletes are as people and what drives them other than money, like how much the competition means to them. But with this, it's like you see a lot of national pride with soccer because it's played all the time, or football, I guess, if you're not from America. Loved it. Watched the first episode. Absolutely adored it. And also coming out tonight is Life Below Zero. I believe it's like episode 15 or some shit from there. But make sure you're checking those out. Now, without any further ado, let me get you into some reality TV news. All right, for your reality TV news, Survivor, Pearl Islands, and Millennial vs. Gen X, the 7th and 33rd season are now on Netflix. Survivor, Pearl Islands, if you haven't seen it, was one of the earlier seasons. Actually has a lot of iconic people. Got Sandra, who's going to be playing in The Traitors that I mentioned earlier. Johnny Fairplay, who was recently on House of Villains. Then we have Rupert, who's maybe one of the most recognizable reality television characters of all time. Big beard, tie-dye shirt, actually ran for governor and debated former Vice President Mike Pence. Just absolute chaotic a season. This is also where you have the most iconic lie in reality television history, which is where Johnny Fairplay lies about his grandmother dying. So if you haven't seen the season, it's very, very good. Millennials versus Gen X, you know, it's interesting to hear people's perspective on this because it is more polarizing than the Pearl Islands one, but you're going to have a tribe of people that I believe were anywhere from 18 to 31 years old. Then you're going to have a tribe of people that were, I believe, from 34 into their like mid 50s, and they compete against each other. So you'll see a lot of like these tropes of like millennials nowadays and boomers, you know, Gen X people nowadays. But underlying with that, you have some really interesting characters and some great gameplay as well. So if you haven't seen, if you're not a Survivor fan, you haven't seen these seasons, I definitely would give it a recommend. Now, on the other hand, Netflix is also removing a reality show come Friday, and that is Love Island USA 2. In my opinion, the best Love Island USA season that we've had. A couple of people have been on other reality shows, including Love Island Games, The Challenge USA, The Challenge World Championship, and The Challenge 38 Ride or Die. So it's very interesting. If you haven't seen Love Island and you have, you know, a couple of days to watch 30 episodes, it's definitely worth a shot. But after the fifth, you won't be able to watch it on Netflix, but you can watch it on Paramount Plus. But I would watch it now if you want to, because Paramount Plus has the ads, unless you pay for extra. So that's certainly my recommendation. Also, the HBO Max original House of Ho, first season and second season, are going to be on Peacock. It's interesting that you'll see like a lateral from streaming service to streaming service, an original being moved to another one. But House of Ho was about a Vietnamese affluent family and some of their, I guess their hijinks they get up to, and their drama of being a very wealthy group of individuals. So definitely would give that a look over on Peacock if you're looking for some lifestyle drama. Now, let me get you into my conversation about the Challenge 39, Battle for a New Challenge. All right, so this is the first of three of Wyatt Wines. This is where I give my short perspective on some of the shows that I am watching. And what I'm going to talk about right now is the Challenge 39, Battle for a New Champion. Now, if you didn't know this, Naveed and Jeremy, two of the guys from Reality Daily, they do a long-form podcast on this every week. It comes out on Thursday nights, but I'm not on there. So I want to go ahead and give my thoughts as well, because I got a lot to say. And for this episode, it was an interesting episode. They're going to start with some trivia and eating, and I listened to Naveed and Jeremy, and they were very anti the eating challenge. And I get it. Like, it is gross at times to see people throwing up. It is something that I don't particularly love to see myself. But I also come from a stance where if this is supposed to be about finding the new champion, finding who is going to be the one that can compete with the Johnny Bananas, with the Caseys, and can potentially win not only eliminations, but can win finals, you have to find people that are willing to eat this thing. So this is kind of a way to really in my opinion, kind of separate some of the week here in the same way that we will eventually get some type of challenge. It will involve a lot of running, a lot of endurance, and we'll see kind of who's not prepped for a final. So even though it wasn't the greatest challenge in the world, it kind of was boring. The trivia questions gave it a little bit of fun, but you know, at the end of the day, it was kind of just a throwaway challenge just to kind of weed out some of the different people. And I'm sure we'll see trivia later on this season as something that definitely is something that a new champion should be at least privy to playing in. Now, we did get best case scenario here in Mariah, Colleen, James, and Corey winning. Now, at this point, we didn't know if it was a guy or a girl's day, but realistically, I think you could look at all four of them and at least imagine a pathway. Obviously, Mariah, I think, is pretty safe for the most part, but they've teased around the idea of maybe she's keeping James around, is hurting her game, and maybe it could hurt her position, and maybe she would be a potential vote, or at least somebody that's being discussed. So, her being there, Colleen, who definitely would have been there if she didn't win, James just being the UK guy, you got to think that he's getting in there some way, shape, or form. And Corey, although he has seemed to kind of make a comeback in terms of being so messy at the beginning of the game, you never know if that is actually what is reality in the game. So I could definitely see him going in. So great, fantastic win for them. Really made this episode a lot more dramatic than I thought it would have been otherwise. They're going to nominate Raven. It's very interesting that you see people campaigning here. And I don't know, do the players have to do a vote or do they all have to mutually agree? Because we've seen this a couple of times where we have one person campaigning and say, oh, I can't say that name. I won't say that name. And it's like, okay, well, if you don't want to say that name, just tell them I'm not saying that name. And if you want to, you know, kind of play a little chicken with them, like, do you want to go into elimination potentially because you don't want to agree on another name? You know, if you're going to protect six or seven people, which is what most of these people are going to protect, they got to give you one if you're going to hone down on that. And I really wish we would see somebody at the bottom because I cannot imagine the challenge just has an actual vote. I'm sure that there has to be some type of consensus. At least that's what I'm hoping for. They did have the Anything But Clothes party. Absolutely loved it. I will say, though, that Naveed and Jeremy talked about this, and they were talking about what they would have worn, and Naveed said that he wore like trash bags to when he went to parties. Jeremy said he would wear a blanket. Like, what the fuck? Where's the creativity, guys? I don't know. I really loved the Mariah, James, and Zara, kind of like the Garden of Eden, you know, have the little like flowers and everything across your private parts. We did see Norris and Horacio crying. You know, he's going to indicate to her that he's going to go do this show on Telemundo. Jeremy pronounced it awesome. I can't. I'm going to try right now, though, but I will butcher it. Exion. He is still on there as of now. It's early January. I think I may have to bring a Horacio watch to some of the reality TV news just to tell everybody how he's doing if you don't have Telemundo. But I've watched a couple of episodes, kind of just fast forward to when he's competing just to see how he's doing. And I think he's got a real shot to win this thing. It's the biggest prize, I think, in Telemundo history. It's like 500,000, I think, although I think that will be divided between the top man and the top woman. So it's not going to quite be as much, but I mean, that's basically what they're competing for this challenge season. So really good spot for him. Did love the Berna kind of getting thrown under the bus, being the awesome cock block here, going to block Raven, but it's also going to block Norris. I don't know, like Horacio just couldn't go in another room. Like, I just felt like they were blaming on Berna, but like, you got the whole house. You know what I mean? Y'all can cuddle on the damn pool table if y'all really want to. But I thought that was so great. Thought there was a possibility that maybe Berna could piss off enough people to get nominated, but Zara's going to nominate herself, which irritates the fuck out of me. And listen, I really like Zara. I liked her on the Challenge UK. I liked her on the World Championship. I like her this season. I think she's a great narrator. She's obviously a great competitor. I think if I had to power rank all of the people, men or women, I would say that she's probably the second most likely to win other than Horacio, in my opinion. So I love her as a competitor, but I don't know if I want to see her on another season if she's going to do this shit. Like, it's one thing, and there's so many idiots online. They'll be saying things like, oh my God, yes, queen, you show them how to do it. That's bad bitch energy. It's like, okay, there's a difference between saying, I'm not scared to go in. Like, I'm not afraid. Give me Cara Maria. Give me Laurel. Like, whatever. If you vote me in the sand, I'm not afraid of anybody. That's different from being like, hey, I will go in on my own will. And granted, we know that she was going to get voted in, which all irritates me as well, because it's almost one of these things where, like, you can't fire me. I quit. So it is very irritating. And I really wish that she was the one that went against Laurel, because maybe she wouldn't have this mindset going back in, where she was like, hey, like, I faced Laurel, and if the challenge was Hall Brawl or Poe Wrestle or something like that, or Balls In, like, I probably would have got fucked up. And, you know, maybe that would give her a little bit of a reason to believe that maybe this isn't the best thing for you to do, is to volunteer, because I like her as a narrator. Obviously, as a competitor, I think she's got such a great chance. But like, I need you to, if you're going to be on a strategic game show, you got to play strategic. You know, you don't have to play dirty if you don't want to. I prefer you to, but at least don't like lay down and die in terms of like be willing to be voted in. Because if you just volunteer for every time that people are going to throw in your name, you are just not going to last in most seasons. Even if you're a great competitor, and maybe it's just because she hasn't seen a lot of seasons. I heard that she didn't even know what the challenge was when the challenge contacted her originally for the UK season. Maybe she just hasn't seen enough challenge to know that there are going to be some eliminations that are a little bit crapshooty. They're not all going to be physical or speed or puzzle, like some of them are just gonna be like some real bullshit and you can get really screwed on. So I wish this would put the fear in her, but it didn't. But I tell you who was scared, and that is Michelle Fitzgerald. Absolutely great editing this episode. Really thought that there was a good chance that Laura was going to pull the chaos there and challenge Michelle with how they were doing. But I gotta tell you, I think Laurel loses to Michelle here. I think she loses to Zara. I think she loses to Raven. I just think that, you know, if it's true what people say, where like Raven's like Dory, which I think is probably not accurate, but if that's what they're saying, then you have to think that somebody like Zara and Michelle, who I've seen do puzzles before, unlike Raven, I have to assume that they are probably going to be able to adapt faster than Raven did. That would be my guess. But Laurel's gonna lose, and she handled it well. She handled it well. I'm not a big Laurel fan. Like, I recognize that she's like super talented and super like physical and is an icon of the challenge. But I think a lot of that honestly can be said about KC, but I find her to be boring. It can be said about Tori, and I find her nauseating at times on the screen. So listen, just because she's a good competitor doesn't mean I particularly care for her. But next week, I thought we were gonna get Brad. That's what I thought we saw in the trailer, but Jeremy was saying on the podcast with Naveed that there was some sleuthing going around, and it looks like it's going to be Cara Maria, which is really interesting, because then we would be looking at another Women's Day back-to-back, and then most likely two Men's Days back-to-back, unless they brought back a Women's Champion, which I don't foresee happening. So that is my recap of the Challenge 39, but make sure you are checking out Naveed and Jeremy's coverage. It is on our podcast feed, and you can get it every Thursday night. All right, now let me get you into conversation with Chris. We'll recap the House of Villains finale. I am here with Chris. We're going to talk about House of Villains, the finale. So if you haven't seen the episode yet and want to, or you have no interest in this at all, make sure you're checking the podcast description for the timestamps, and you can go ahead and skip over this. Chris, how are you?
Oh, Wyatt, I'm doing well. You know, I'm finally back home from the holidays and excited to talk about this finale. Oh, man, what a finale it was. Yeah, it was good.
Really unfortunate that the finale kind of falls on the holiday season. I think that made it a whole lot harder for people to be able to watch in real time. But I'm excited for us to get into this. I guess I'll just go ahead and start with the elephant in the room here. The winner of the game is Tanisha. Just immediate thoughts on Tanisha as the winner of House of Villains.
You know, I'm happy with it. Like, I think she played good. I think she and Bananas kind of played two different games, you know, where like Bananas kind of really physical. But like, she made a lot of social, you know, bonds. She did play kind of strategically. She played hard. She didn't really give up too much outside of that little phobia fiasco we had, right? And I think she played good. She made relationships that she needed to. And she had a really good speech. And you know, I'm happy with it. I will say I was not expecting it. I think I saw this possibility, but I was kind of blindsided at the end a little bit. But definitely deserved, you know. She busted her ass. She deserved it.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I did not expect her to win when I found out who the final three was going to be. I did think Bananas would end up winning, but I will say I do think Tanisha is a great winner. And listen, I'm not going to be upset if people feel like, hey, Bananas is the great player. He got robbed. You know, that's not going to bother me if people have that notion, but I do think there's a lot of really interesting things about the House of Villains jury that we can discuss a little bit further. But before we get into that, Chris, I just want to start at the beginning of the episode. The eliminated players are back, except for Bobby.
I think this is the part where Bobby loses his money, right? Like, he doesn't get any show money. He can't, right?
I assume. So here was the rumor, Chris, and I had heard this rumor when we were covering him nominating himself and everything, but I just didn't give it a whole lot of credence. Now I think it probably is true. Apparently, Bobby had some other type of commitment that he had, and instead of basically just quitting the show, which he didn't want to do, that's why he nominated himself. He pretty much knew he was going to go home, but he had this other engagement. And like I said, I'm not positive this is true, but because he's not there at the end, I have to imagine that is probably accurate.
Do you know what engagement? I'm just curious.
I don't. Maybe it was Love and Hip Hop. I don't know.
Maybe it was the recordings for that. I'm not quite sure, but definitely interesting and unfortunate if that's the case.
Yeah, no, I think not having Bobby there does suck because imagine Bobby just giving a speech or a question at the end. It would have been great. He's already great TV, so that part does suck, but. I guess it is what it is. I guess we talked about it this season quite a bit. The season is it's less traditional than most reality shows, and this is just one more thing to the list. So it sucks, but it is what it is. Bobby's got to make that money somehow.
Yeah, definitely. It's unfortunate, but I guess this is something that maybe they'll learn for season two. If there is going to be a season two, like, hey, let's make sure that these people have no other commitments to the case of the filming.
You think that would be like priority number one?
Yeah, I guess they just maybe are just a little bit unaware, or maybe they casted somebody that didn't know what this type of show would be. So it may be in season two they'll kind of fix all this. But they have the super villain challenge, and what we expected the end game to be, Chris, wasn't what it was. I was mentioning last week that I believe it's probably going to be the winner of the supervillain challenges, drag somebody to the end, a la Celebrity Big Brother. But that turns out not to be the case. What it's going to be is the winner is going to be able to choose somebody to go to the end, but then the other three are going to have to fight it out in a redemption challenge to make the final three. And then from the final three, we'll get the vote. And Chef Ben from Below Deck, not somebody that I'm super familiar with, but I know a lot of Bravo fans out there are going to be very familiar with some of his drunken antics. He's going to be here as the chef, and the contestants have to eat $200 worth of food to win supervillain. And you can have a little bit of strategy to this. You have for $10, you can do a hard-boiled egg. For $20, you can do a hot chicken wing. For $30, you can do a red snapper's eyeball. For $40, you can do a bull's testicle. And then for $50, you can do a pig's brain pie. Now, I got two questions for you, Chris. First off, what was your thoughts on this challenge as just in terms of being the final supervillain challenge? And two, what would you pick if you had to do $200 worth of this food?
I liked it, Wyatt. I think it was a bit weak, to be honest. I feel like some of the stuff was kind of like meh, like it's not that bad, but it was fun. I feel like we've had a lot of gross food eating challenges in reality TV this year. I think for me, honestly, I think I just go either all bull testicles or all the pig brains. I think just, on the eyeballs too, a bunch of eyeballs, just throw them down. I think the eyeballs might be the easiest, just swallow them whole, to be honest with you. But it's a tough one. Four pig brains. You knock that out, you're done.
But yeah,
I like the eyeballs. Could they pile it up like entirely on eyeballs? Is that a thing?
I believe so. And I was thinking in my head, I don't think you could actually pile up completely because that money would have ended up being like 180 or 210. So you would have had to do some type of thing. So what I would have done is I would have done the six eyeballs and the one hot wing, or maybe two boiled eggs if I was feeling too much of a pussy to eat the hot wing. But I just would think that the eyeballs, I mean, they can't be that hard to chew, right? Like I would say you bite it and they just bust. And I just feel like that would be a lot easier than the testicles, which with the veins and everything would probably be hard to get down. The brains, I assume, are pretty chewy. The hot wings, if they're really hot and they really are going to hurt you in the way they did shake, then yeah, that would slow you down, right, from eating them. And the eggs, I mean, dude, you can't eat 20 eggs, right, and win this competition. So I really think that the eyeballs and then maybe put a chicken wing or two eggs at the end would have been the way to go.
Yeah, you load up on eyeballs, and we saw that, with the winner, they had more eyeballs than anyone else, and sure enough, they won, and I think we saw kind of in the episode where it was easy to eat, and everyone else is struggling, and the one person who got the eyeballs is doing good.
Yeah, fair play. He had two brains, two eyeballs, one testicle. Tanisha had two balls and six chicken wings. Shake went all wings. Daniels did four eyeballs, two testicles, and then Infixa did two brains, two eyeballs, and nine eggs, but she barely touched any of it.
I don't know what this was. Like, she was doing it for show? I don't know. Or she got it. She's like, yeah, no, I'm not doing that.
Yeah. But Daniels is going to win. And then we had a little bit of, is he going to take Infixa or is he going to take Tanisha? At the end of the day, he is going to take Tanisha to the final two, or the final three, excuse me. Did you think that he was going to take Tanisha, or did you think it was a chance he would take Infixa?
No, dude, I did not think he was gonna take her. I thought Banana's just ready to cut her throat for the win. And I think Anfisia, if he takes Anfisia and Tanisha loses, I think he wins against Banana's or Shake, to be honest with you. I really think Tanisha's the only person who can beat Banana's at the end, and I was very shocked that he did that. Very, very shocked.
I wonder if this was a miscalculation by Bananas in terms of jury management. You know, he probably felt like, hey, Tanisha's probably somebody that would carry a vendetta. So if I don't take her, then maybe she won't vote for me. But if I don't take Anfisa, then not only can she potentially win to make the final three, but she may say, hey, like, I still like Bananas more than I like Fair Play or Shake or Tanisha. So maybe he felt like that he would have gotten that vote. Maybe he felt like, well, if I don't take Tanisha, I definitely will lose her as a vote. I wonder if that was the case.
Well, now, correct me if I'm wrong, Wyatt, because I've never seen, like, the challenge and stuff. Has Bananas ever really played a game that's, like, that has that jury at the end? Or no?
No. They've never done one with him that has a type of jury. The closest thing that I can say to that is there was a season called The Island where instead of a physical elimination to eliminate somebody, they did have a vote. Instead to eliminate, like, out of two people to eliminate one of them. So that he did play like the strategic game at some point, but it wasn't like a jury to win. So this is super new to him, but I know that he's probably aware of Survivor. He's aware of Big Brother. He probably is aware that like being too villainous could hurt him. Although that does seem to be what his main argument is in front of the jury, where it's like, hey, I actually played the best game. I was the most villainous of the three.
Yeah. But you say that, but then you know, at the end of the day, you can't finish the job. You know, you can't backstab Tanisha, and that's what did it. That's what made him lose.
Yeah. And then we had the redemption challenge where Anfisa is going to beat Shake in Fair Play and the guest to contest its quote challenge. I actually liked this one, Chris. I didn't mention it for the food challenge, but I hated the food challenge because it seems like this entire season we've had where, you know, you can sabotage somebody at some point or you can help somebody to win. And it seems like we didn't have that component here. I just felt like the show is a lot better when you do have that type of like strategic social component to it. But this at least does capitalize on who you know the most. And I did like that.
Yeah, I think that's a good one, you know, and it really does kind of really prove who is listening and who is handling the jury well. And VCL, yeah, I was kind of surprised how well she did, Wyatt. She like killed that. Like, I mean, like steamrolled that competition. I don't know if she even got one wrong. I was very shocked that she did so well. Were you or no? What were you expecting?
I would have expected Fair Play to do the best here because I would have expected him to probably have the foresight to know there probably would be something like this. I mean, granted, this is a new show, but, you know, Survivor used to do stuff like this in its earlier seasons. Big Brother used to do something like this. Yeah, they've done something similar with the punchlines and stuff where the jury got to pick. So I did think that this was something that he might have been thinking about. And for that reason, I thought maybe he'd be thinking about it. But, you know, here's the thing, right? Is this isn't about like what happened in the game. This isn't about something that somebody said during like, you know, the nomination ceremonies or anything. These were all confessional stuff, you know, and people could be completely different people behind those confessional walls. So I don't blame any of them for doing poorly if they ended up missing some.
No, I don't blame them, but like I was shocked. Like Fair Play did horrible. I mean, he was god awful, really.
He did better than Shake.
Did he? Did he come back at the end, or was he?
Yeah, Shake was the first person out, and Joel was like, okay, "Listen, Shake, you can't win, so you know, get out of frame."
No, I got it mixed up. Yeah, no, but it was just Anfisa, she pulled it off. I really did not expect that. I got all season long. I just kind of thought she wasn't really paying attention. She wasn't really playing a social game. She just kind of was chilling, and you know, she proved me wrong. She was listening the whole time.
Yeah, and then we get down to the jury between Anfisa, Bananas, and Tanisha, and we're going to get Shake, Corinne, and Fair Play. They're going to vote for Bananas, and then for Tanisha, we'll have Omarosa, Jackson, New York. How many of these votes surprised you?
So I was kind of shocked that Omarosa voted for Tanisha, a bit, but also, like, she wasn't crazy about Bananas, but that was kind of shocking to me. New York a bit. That's kind of it, to be honest with you. I kind of expected Fair Play to vote for Bananas and Shake to do Bananas. Corinne, I was kind of weird, the whole Corinne and Anfisa and Bananas thing at the end. That was a little weird. I just got off on. What are your thoughts on that? I was so like, oh.
Well, I think he knew.
He's playing for the jury vote, right?
Yeah, I think he knew that. flirting with somebody is beneficial to his game. And whether that when it was Corinne, then it was Corinne. And when it was Anfisa, it was Anfisa. And I think he probably told her, like, hey, you know, if I flirt with Anfisa, I'm having a better shot to win. And I think that's probably why Corinne was as more forgiving. I was a little bit surprised by Corinne. I just assumed that Corinne would be the type that when a guy lies to her, like Bananas did, or at least we assume that he did in terms of like, I'm not going to vote you out, but I did. I just think that she would not want the guy to have the last laugh, right? I don't think that she would want to come off as dumb. Not saying that she is by any stretch, but that's what I would think. So I actually expected her to vote for Tanisha because she had a pretty good relationship with Tanisha. So I thought that maybe she would vote for that. Fair play and shake. I knew would vote for Bananas. Fair play with the fucking meltdown at the end, like almost crying again, talking about how like you know, I respect the game. And it's like, dude, like it's the House of Villains. Like you can't be crying during your jury vote, right? Like what he said is fine. Like I respect the game, so I want the person that I feel like played the best to win. I get that, but that was kind of odd. New York was a little bit of a, it's not too much of a curveball because I would have expected her to get that vote coming in, but New York in the episode does seem a little bit confused that people weren't voting for Bananas when Shake and Corinne were talking. So for that reason, I was a little surprised by her vote. Omarosa, I figured, would vote for Anfisa if Anfisa had a shot. But Omarosa probably read the room and realized that Anfisa was not going to win. So yeah. She probably said, okay, well, let me vote where it actually matters. But her and Jax, I'm not too surprised by that. But listen, I really think that, in my opinion, if I had to say who I thought played the best game, I do think it's Tanisha. And the reason for this is this, Chris. Johnny Bananas has been known as a guy that will cut certain people and make hard decisions in times of need. And granted, you know, there are some people that he's always been loyal to and he's never turned his back on. He had a season, Chris, where he won the money, $275,000, with his partner, Sarah, and he had the option of splitting that money or taking it all, and he took it all. So for me, when you're talking about Bananas and money, I expected him to turn on anybody that he needed to. And for him to take Tanisha to the end, somebody that he knew was a big threat, somebody that in his own words says, when I took her, I knew that she probably was going to win this money. That to me is like a sign of weakness. And I think in the House of Villains, you want to vote for the person that's able to, you know, break through that norm. So if you're Bananas, you can be like, hey, Bananas is this cutthroat game player, but, you know, he wasn't cutthroat enough to turn his ally. And I think that's a pro for Tanisha. So that's why I think Tanisha played a better game than Bananas.
Yeah, no, and that was what did at the end. You know, he like you said, he was talking like, oh, like I played the most villainous game. I cut him on his neck, but she didn't. Bananas at the end, you couldn't do it. You didn't do it, and I think she did really well. Like I am happy for her. Like I think I was expecting Bananas just because he won so many challenges, you know, and he was kind of I'd say I don't know if he was always like a big like in your face target, but like you always know Bananas is a target. Everyone's always talking about him, so that's why I expected it. But I think Tanisha played really well. You know, she went off.
To me, I just expect for Bananas to make the moves that are the best for him at all times. And when he didn't do that, I think you have to give some credit to whoever that was, whether that would have been Tanisha or whether it would have been Anfisa. You know, if he took Anfisa and had that exact same comment where it's like, I know I'm going to lose to Anfisa, but our friendship is so good, then I would say the same thing about Anfisa should be able to win this. I think Tanisha did the impossible, and that's kind of breakthrough to Bananas in a way that I don't think that you would typically see on the challenge.
Like, when do you think this was like forming? This like, I mean, where do you think it started? We'll go like all the way back from like day one, day two, day three.
I think Tanisha was very aware of who Bananas was as a player. I think she knew about the challenge. I think she probably loosely has kept up with it over the years. I mentioned in a previous episode that Tanisha did have a job where she was basically recapping reality TV every single day for this like syndicated show. So I did think that. You know, she probably respects Bananas, and she probably said, hey, if I'm with Bananas, I know he'll have my back, and I know that he'll be able to guide me in the right direction. And Bananas probably sensed that type of, like, undying loyalty, especially when he was on the ropes in, like, the second week or so, and she stood by him. So I think that he really appreciated that loyalty, and then they just built a great friendship from there.
That makes sense. Well, I was just curious, when do you think it started up?
And I also think that the mother thing also helps her as well.
Yeah.
But all right, Chris, that is the wrap up for this season. I mean, just your overall view of the season. I know you kind of went into the show only really seeing Survivor, only knowing Fair Play, not knowing the other people there. But off just the rip of House of Villains as a format, are you excited for season two? Do you want a season two?
Oh, why? We need season two. This was an amazing show. I laughed every episode, almost all episodes. Great characters, great casting, you know, fun little twist here and there, you know, fun challenges. Like it was good. It was really good, you know. And we said it all season. I'm the guy who, you know, who's not like too big on reality TV. And this is the show that's bringing me to reality TV. You know, I want to see all these people, all these castmates and their old seasons or whatever game they played or show they were in. I want to check it out because I really did, you know, like these people. I grew to like them, grew to really enjoy who they are as people. You know, just it was really good. I recommend it to anyone who's maybe listening to this with their friends and they haven't seen the show yet. Watch it. It's a good show. It's great. Season two. I hope they get season two rolling because it's going to be good.
Yeah, it's almost like the reality TV, like multiverse. It's almost like we have the Avengers now. You know, you got things like the Traitors. You have House of Villains. You got All-Star Shore. You have the GOAT that's coming up. So it's just like, I love these shows where you bring all of these people together that wouldn't normally interact. And as much as I love the newbie reality shows, I just think that a newbie reality show is just a whole lot harder for a network to say yes to than something that already is coming with a fan base, like a alumni-based series like this is. So for me, I'm very excited for House of Villains Season 2. I hope it happens, and hopefully we'll see this. But everybody, stay tuned for what's coming up next on Reality Village.
All right, this is the third of three of the Wyatt Wines. I'm talking about the second and third episode of 1,000-Pound Sisters. This actually started in December. I was talking to Nathan about a pilot season, and we loved it so much, and a lot of you like it. We heard a lot of great feedback, so I definitely wanted to make it part of the Reality Daily rotation in terms of my commentary. So I watched both of these episodes, and it was fun. You know, last time we saw Tammy coming out of rehab and is now getting situated at home, but obviously she has some drama at home with some of the family, and then we also have Caleb, who's back in rehab 500 miles away. I did not realize how far it was away from them. That is crazy. You know, I was thinking, like, hey, you can go see him, maybe get one of your relatives to go take you up there. I was thinking maybe it was a couple hours max, but 10 hours, I just don't know. Or I guess 500 miles, probably 10 hours is what I would imagine it would take. Absolutely crazy. But the second episode was really fun. Chris took Tammy to the grocery store for the first time, which was great. She was able to get in the front door and close it, which she said she hadn't done it since she was 16, which is just crazy because I believe now she's like over 30. So it's just crazy how people live their life like that for such a long period of time. And it makes you really root for her in a way that I didn't necessarily expect to be rooting for her. You know, I knew that I would be empathetic to certain things, but I am so pro Tammy in this situation, her journey. She does get the little shopping cart. So she just get to have the feeling of pushing the shopping cart while she's going. It's a free Tammy party this episode too. It's being thrown. I did love that Chris is going to do, instead of pin the tail on the donkey, it was pin the trach. Thought that was so funny. Also a good moment is when Tammy is talking to our sister Amy about the charcuterie board, but calls it a charcuterie board, which was fantastic. But one of the things that really stuck out to me in episode one at the end there is this fight between Amanda and Amy. And Amanda is going to be talking about Amy's cross eye, and that's going to hurt her feelings quite a bit. I did love that they were able to make up. Amy just kind of goes into, she's having so much stress and depression and everything, and Amanda's really going to sort her out and said, listen, it's not postpartum depression. It's not about your child. It's about you just have regular depression. You have a husband that's a lazy sack of shit. I mean, what a fucking villain that guy is. Michael just absolutely does nothing. I cannot remember a reality TV person that I despised as much as Michael in just a short amount of time. But she's going to tell her, she's going to say, listen, you need to go to a therapist and everything. She's like, well, I can't leave my kids because Michael doesn't want to take care of them. And it just turns into something just crazy later on. But getting back to the party, Tammy's mom's going to come over and Tammy's going to confront her for not thinking she would stick out to it. Great moment for her where she said, well, you made me out to be a liar, which it's not really a lie, right? Like, it's like she gave an opinion. She didn't state it as fact. So I don't know if she's necessarily a liar, but love that Tammy's mom was able to come around with that. Love the flashbacks they do. As somebody that's just coming in this season, love to kind of be able to figure out exactly what some of the stances of some of their family members were. But then we get to the real meat of the episode where Amy is just fed up with her husband and it's breaking down. We have multiple family members there. Tammy's over there, and then sisters Amanda and Misty are over there as well. And it's going to break down to Amy leaving. She wants her debit card. Michael won't give it to her. It leads to them arguing back and forth. And she's like, I'm going to leave. And he's like, okay, well, you better leave one of the boys here. And they said, don't you fucking do that because you don't do nothing with the kids. Don't talk about like kidnapping the kid or anything. Tammy's going to get scared. She's going to call the police. And while she's doing that, Amanda and Michael, they're nose to nose. He's like, touch me. And she was like, make me leave the house. Chaos through there. And then the third episode picks up when they're doing that, where the cops are going to come. Michael's going to give the debit card like a motherfucking coward. I mean, granted, he should have. Like, it's not like I'm not calling him a coward. because he gave it, but it's like, dude, like you could have like not had the cops called and gave it to her like a minute ago. He's going to give it to her. They're going to talk to him and everything. And all the girls are going to get to leave. So I'm very happy about that. Amanda missed, unfortunately, though, they're going to break their nicotine sobriety. They have to have this so they can get the gastric bypass surgery. And I really feel like, I think this, I know it was chaotic, but like you could have went without the cigarette. You know what I mean? You tell me there's no snacks in that house you could have had or something. Like, I don't know, like chew on your fucking finger. If this is like what you really want is to like lose weight and this is the way that you think you got to lose it. I believe Misty said it was like to get off the insulin or something like that. So if that's the case, like, why are you smoking a cigarette? And especially Misty, like, what were you stressed about? You weren't even in there. You weren't the one that was nose to nose with Michael. You're not the one that's yelling at him. I don't know what you're stressed about. Yeah, chaos there. But Amanda, Tammy, and Amy, they're going to get to go to the grocery store. And then we see a really funny scene with all of the sisters, except for Misty. She wasn't here. They're going to put on these face masks, which they say reminds them of a used condom. They say it was like aloe vera. Amy's going to say, with her purple hair, is going to say she looks like Come Face the Clown, which I thought was hilarious. But then they get a little bit serious, and they're going to talk about Amy actually wanting a divorce, and she feels like that's something that she needs to go through. But she's worried that Michael is going to take a bunch of the money out of the bank account. He doesn't work. He's a fucking deadbeat. So she's like, well, all the money in the bank is hers, and she's just afraid that it's going to completely shut down. So Amanda's going to take her over, and they're going to take all the money out except for $1,000 and leave it in that account. Then we have Amy and Chris are going to go to the doctor. Excuse me, Tammy and Chris are going to go to the doctor. Tammy's 420 pounds, so she's lost well over 100 pounds since the surgery. Chris is at 300, which is not good because he was about 300. He's plateauing a little bit. The doctor's going to say, listen, you can plateau. That's fine, but you're going to have to lose that 50 pounds before we can do any type of like, I forgot what they called it, but like the flats, the flabby skin. We need to be able to take that off. And I understand the frustration there from Chris, but I just wish that he would realize that, like, it's going to get harder after you lose, like, a massive amount of weight in the way that he does, right? It's going to be a little bit harder, but hopefully he's able to get there. Another person that does not particularly do well with the weight loss is going to be Caleb, because Caleb has to do a weigh-in, and he's going to do it with Tammy's doctor, who sets it up for him. And when he gets on scale, he's 537 pounds, which apparently is about a 37-pound weight gain. So now he's gained weight. He can't get the surgery, and if he can't get the surgery, he can't get the trach out. And if he can't get the trach out, then he can't go live with Tammy and fuck her good, as he said in the first episode. So he's heartbroken by this. The doctor tells him, listen, you get to 500, we can probably look at doing the weight loss surgery, but even after the weight loss surgery, you're still gonna have to be in rehab for another 6 months or so before we take the trach out. So it basically puts him at least a year out at this point. He's got to lose this weight, and then he's got to go and do the rehab after the surgery. So he's going to tell Amy about that, and she's going to be so upset by that. But I did love this part in the episode where, as she's encouraging him to do all these things that he needs to do, Tammy, Chris, Amanda, and Misty, they're actually going to go work out together. They're going to put on the trash bags, and they're going to go work out. It's so weird they did the trash bags. I think even the personal trainer mentioned it was like almost like wrestling in high school where you're trying to sweat off those final pounds. But they're going to work out together. I really think that if these people actually want to lose weight, I do think working out together is the best way to do it. You can keep each other accountable, right? That way, nobody's falling off the horse, at least in terms of the workout. In terms of the food, you know, you're not living together, but Amy's living with Tammy the entire time. A little bit of, I guess, foreshadowing here from the producers, where it does look like that maybe Tammy's getting a little bit overwhelmed with the kids as well, because it is new to her and it's something that she has to kind of be accustomed to being the provider for people in terms of like being able to like feed them and everything when Amy's not around, or at least entertain them, where when she was at the rehab, you know, everybody was kind of waiting on her, you know, bringing her the meals and everything. So I do wonder if there will be some drama later on with, you know, Amy being the one that's, Tammy being stressed out by Amy's kids. Also, if Caleb's gaining weight in this rehab facility, what's the rehab facility for? He was like, oh man, my diets went to shit. How? Like, you're in rehab. Like, I don't get it. Like, how are you smuggling candy bars off the black market? If somebody have like the giant trench coat that they like open up and there's like Hershey bars on one side and like ice cream on the other. I don't understand. If you're in like a fat rehab, how are you off your diet? They fix your fucking meals. Just don't get it. Is there commissary there, like jail, where you can go and use your fat bucks to get the food out? I just don't know. I just don't know how he's fallen off of this. And I feel like this is like an indictment on the facility. Like, if the facility is like allowing this stuff to happen when this person is in the walls, I just don't understand. Like, why are you offering food that is going to allow him to make bad choices? I watched in the first episode, it's just not a regular rehab facility. This is like all overweight people. So I just don't understand how you could have choices there that are going to make people gain weight. It just seems chaotic to me. And I didn't realize this after the first episode, but I did see this in some of the articles after. Caleb's actually unfortunately passed away. He passed away before the season even started. I think he passed away in, I want to say, like June or so. I'll be interested to see if this is addressed on the show. Was this maybe at the end of the season? Is this something that was kind of a lull period between the end of filming and the beginning of the actual airing of the shows? I'm not sure, and I'm interested to hear how they'll handle that. And maybe that's the way, because like even Caleb, to me, even though he's gained this weight and he's obviously not doing what he's supposed to be doing at this time by gaining on this weight, I still want him to succeed, right? Like, I feel this way about all of them. It's like, with the exception of that shitbag Michael, I like everybody on this show. And that's something that is refreshing for the most part, because no matter what show you watch, no matter if you watch, like, Keeping Up with the Kardashians all the way down to Survivor, you're going to find villains. And I do like the fact that that 1,000-Pound Sisters at least have pretty likable cast for the most part. All right, so that does my wrap-up for 1,000-Pound Sisters. Stay tuned for the outro. All right, and that's going to wrap up everything today. Tune in tomorrow. I'm going to be doing some Wyatt whining about Smothered Episode 2 and 3. I did 1,000-Pound Sisters today. I'm going to be doing Smothered tomorrow. That way, when they air on Tuesday night, I will be able to do Episode 4 of both of them for you on Wednesday's episode. Some shows that I'm looking at potentially covering, at least giving my initial thoughts on it: Kids Bacon Championship, America's Got Talent, 90 Day Fiancé, Jeopardy UK, and Great British Bake Off. Not sure how much time I'll have to get to all of them, but if you're looking at them and you're not quite sure if you want to commit the time to it, feel free to tune in tomorrow when I give my review. If you want to follow us on social media, I'd love to hear your reaction to these daily shows. Do you think that this is something that's a great idea and something that you would listen to, or is it something that you don't particularly care for, you didn't like how we did it, and you have some criticism of what could make it better? Let us know. It's Reality Daily Pod. That is on X, aka Twitter, or on Instagram, or on TikTok, Mastodon, Threads, or even on YouTube at Reality Daily Pod there. So let us know. Make sure you're hitting the subscribe button, whether on YouTube or podcast. Rate us 5 stars. It really helps the algorithm quite a bit. Share the podcast with anybody that you think may be interested in listening to this. We certainly would appreciate it. All right. Until next time. Bye.